Kid Icarus, get ready for the action and adventure of Greek mythology translated to the video age. Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And guys, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm still thinking about games like Castlevania and Super Mario Brothers, but we got a good one today. We got Kid Icarus, a game that Nintendo made and just kind of forgot about for a good decade or two, and then now Pit's in Smash and Politena's in Smash, and
it's been a Kid Icarus renaissance.
Well, I mean, it hasn't been as good as like a Fire Emblem renaissance, but if we remember, like, Fire Emblem is also like, it was always big in Japan, it just got big here again.
Yeah,
but it's just nice to see that, you know, that franchise is still kicking around on like other Nintendo franchises. Like, when is Rob gonna get another game?
I think soon.
This is kind of a spiritual Rob successor.
Yeah, I think of it that way a lot, you know, in the way that like it's almost the same, but Pit doesn't stack blocks or move blocks
right.
at all.
Which is like my biggest flaw.
Destroy blocks. He doesn't do that. So that's my deal breaker on if Kid Icarus is a Rob clone.
Not an essential Rob game.
Yeah, not an essential Rob game. Thankfully, this isn't part of the Rob series. This is Kid Icarus directed by a bunch of different people. It's true. We'll get into the development later in the game, but it's actually like hard to really like land on who's responsible for this game, but we'll tease that for now and go to that later. For now, I'd like to get some first impressions from you guys. Joe?
So I've seen very, very little amounts of like footage of this game being played, and I'll be honest, I didn't have too high of hopes for it from what I remembered, but this time, for the first time, I sat down and I was like, I'm going to read the manual before I even touch the game, which I know that's Sam's thing, but I never read the manual before I even touch the game. And the manual, first of all, that's my first impression, is like a novel. I mean, for an NES manual, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of story set up in there.
10 pages.
Is it 10 pages?
It's a storybook.
And three or four of them is the like the background, like the story of what's going on.
Oh no, 10 pages of story.
Oh, right, is it?
There's more pages of things in general, but yeah, it's like it starts all the way back with like, let us go back to the distant past. You know, it's like a novel.
Right. And I was just looking at a PDF, so I don't remember. I don't remember how.
Pages it's actually it's interesting enough. It's hosted on Nintendo's website still. The original manual. Mm. Joe, continue with your first impressions.
No, so then when I played the actual game, I was impressed with the movement of it. I was impressed that there is a sort of a save function because it gives you a password when you die. And it, after having read the manual, it kind of felt like the first one that really feels like a full adventure. This is the kind of thing that I look for in a video game. Like, I want to feel like I'm going on this adventure, like there's a story to be told, and I was kind of really excited when I started playing this game. I was hoping it would deliver, and we'll get into whether or not I thought it delivered later.
Now, just real quick, you mentioned the password system, and obviously that's kind of new for us as we're playing these games chronologically, but they're going to come about for many NES games. So I'm just curious, what do you think about the length of the passwords?
I assume that there's a very detailed level of what it's remembering.
Oh yeah, it's
in
got
there
like items
because
and
yeah, what is it? There's four lines of like what, eight digits?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you can even spell things out. You know, I don't know the exact cheats, but you can spell things out in the passwords for something where it's like, you know, kid kid Icarus.
Yeah,
like
I use that cheat.
Yeah, and like those cheats will like do stuff for you in the game. So I think like, you know, it's a neat password system, and it's kind of cool to see this, you know, early on in the NES. Sean, what are your first impressions?
My first impression is that this is the most complex adventure game I've seen so far. I like where things are headed with how much like RPG elements they've introduced in this game between like a currency system and leveling up your like your max HP and all these side quest things you can go on and actual like vendors and merchants. Like, I really like all of that. It's got some good music. There's some parts that are way too like Byzantine for me, but I'll go into that as well. But yeah, overall, I was excited by what I was signing up for.
Very cool, very cool. I like that word, Byzantine.
Well, I don't know. Kid Icarus is a... We'll get into it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. And I think, you know, just for a point of reference here, I think I stand with a lot of players where, you know, we first even found out about Kid Icarus maybe in, like, Super Smash Bros. Melee when he was just a trophy. And you're like, oh, who's that guy? And you, like, read a little bio about him and, like, oh, Nintendo made this game on the NES that they've never, like, talked about. And then, you know, he came to Brawl and I wasn't, like, too psyched about it or anything. But we started to see a lot of games based off of those and we were waiting for, like, when's the Kid Icarus game going to come around? And funny enough, Sakurai actually wound up making the Kid Icarus Uprising game for the 3DS. He's also the developer for the director for Super Smash Bros. Series in general. So he makes the Uprising game, and I gave that a try first before I ever touched this NES game. I actually went to this NES game cold. I had never heard anything positive or negative about it. So with all of that in mind, I'm blown away by this game. Like, it's such a surprise to just, like, see this game and to not hear it more often when it's when it's talked about on lists and stuff like that, because this comes out really close to Legend of Zelda and Metroid time, but it seems like those two just left this one in the dust. But similar to what you guys were both saying, you know, when I started the game, I just thought, like, oh, it's a platform game, you know, with some shooting mechanics and stuff like that. And then you go into a room and you can buy stuff. And then you go into another room and you upgrade yourself. It's like, and then you realize, like, oh, you're only on World 1-1 and you can continue, you know, and it's a long, long game. It's like it continued to change what it is. And that was very exciting for me. So honestly, really nice surprise at this one, but not without its flaws.
Yes.
Let's break it down then. Let's talk a little bit about Kid Icarus from an objective standpoint. In case you didn't know, Kid Icarus is an action platformer with some RPG elements. You control Pit through four worlds of vertical and horizontal platforming, obtaining new weapons along the way and upgrading your old ones. So that's kind of like the copy-paste formula for these action platformer RPG games, I guess. But more exciting is the actual plot of the game. Do either one of you want to tackle that plot, Joe?
I'll take a shot at it because I really was...
You don't have to be perfect because
no.
Is 10 pages of memorization.
Trust me, I will give you the Cliff Notes version of the plot. But the manual leads you into the fact that this kingdom has existed forever. And what's the goddess's name? Palutena?
I think it's Palutena, yeah.
Palutena,
whatever.
Palutena and Medusa, who we know Medusa already from Castlevania.
Or mythology.
Or mythology, but I'm talking about in the context of
Did you make that connection that, like, this is the same Medusa, like, after she was done with
from
Pit?
Castlevania?
Yeah, that was just Medusa's head in the prior game.
Also, but no, I imagine that this game is a prequel to Castlevania. It takes place, like, you know, about 1,000 or 2,000 years before it.
But anyway, you're in Angel Land.
Angel Land, yeah.
Angel Land is
the
name
really, like, make
of
it,
the
yeah,
land.
There's no Greek euphemism there. It's just Angel Land.
Palutena used her light to help crops grow for the men and the gods that lived in Angel Land. And Medusa, who hated mankind, used to dry out the crops. And turn people into statues. So Palutena banished Medusa. I feel like I'm reading like a story.
You're pretty much giving us a story time here. Also, I like how every time you say Palutena, it changes.
Palutena.
I know, it's like
Chubby Cherub.
You might as well
Chubby
cover all your bases here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they shouldn't make those names
pronunciation,
that hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Medusa's kind of like, she's doing all this crazy stuff. And Medusa looks nothing like how I remember a Medusa.
Why don't we just call her Lil P?
Lil P?
Yeah.
That's how I have it in my notes.
Well, she's Big P.
Pit could be, Pit's Lil P.
Yep.
So Medusa joins up with the monsters, builds an army. She's banished to the underworld at the time, so she builds an army. She arises from the underworld, takes over the main world and the
Earth.
Whatever the main world.
The main
That's
world.
What I call it. That's what I call like where we live here. The
we
world.
Live on the main world, and then there's where Palutena lives.
Yeah. Palutena lives, which is like the heaven of it. I don't remember what they call it particularly. The
yeah.
not like Olympus or anything. They
yeah,
have like a
not
name
yet.
For a sky
but
world. Or
she's
something.
Like imprisoned.
Yeah, so she imprisons Palutena, and in a place where Pit already is, and Palutena apparently has the magic to give Pit.
No, I think she was like projecting her will from the sky prison.
Oh, I thought she
to
she
Pit's prison in the underworld.
Gotcha, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so Pit is like he's the last surviving person in Palutena's army. So it's like it's funny because it's like he'll have to do. Like,
right.
There's
but he
always
was also,
like, this joke about how he's not really that competent.
Yeah.
He's not,
like, how to get captured.
He's this little guy, and it's like, well, he'll have to do. And I think the game kind of makes fun of that a lot.
Well,
in, like,
but I mean, he got captured, but everyone else got dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
well, he got dead, or similar to, like, Super Mario 64, where the toads are actually just chained to the walls.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like, maybe, you know, they just turned to stone.
Or they got petrified.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, yeah. Because you can see
we'll get into
some
the stone
them
guys, though, later.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's pretty much the story in a nutshell. Sorry to confuse you guys out there. Long story short, Medusa's the villain.
Yes.
And you're this little scrawny guy, Pit, and you really start off scrawny. I mean, your arrows are getting, you're not even shooting them throughout the entirety of the screen.
They just fall right in front of your feet. I don't
yeah,
know
it's
how
like,
they're killing anything.
Yeah,
but
you got to work on those biceps.
Yeah.
Like, that's really bad. So let's get into the fundamentals of the game. You know, first, the shooting, which we talked about. It's kind of awful at first, but there's ways to upgrade.
Sure.
And I like that you can shoot up, but I didn't.
Only straight up.
Yeah, only straight up. And I also just didn't appreciate, though, that like you're kind of locked. When you have to do that.
Yeah, you can't
move.
Strafe or anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense because he can shoot in the air like other directions and be moving, but he has to be like
a fixed interesting
position.
Design decision.
That's
I
also
guess.
True when you crouch. You crouch and you do, like at least in like Mario, you crouch, you slide a little bit.
Oh, Pit doesn't
crouch.
Slide?
Maybe he does a little bit. I don't think you can slide under things.
It
like
might have
can
been
and,
even the surface he was on was sliding because there are surfaces in this game like ice and stuff like that will cause you to slide.
But, you know, I guess the long story short is that you are a flawed hero. Like, you can't do everything.
Right. But you're on your way because you're going to, along the way, there's plenty of different, like, shops and there's even a black market to go to and stuff like that. So, real quick, maybe we just start right at the beginning. We're on, in World 1, it's a vertical platformer, which I thought was interesting, similar to, like, Super Mario Brothers 2 style.
Yeah. The thing that's wrong with this, though, and this is one of the things that irked me for most of, like, the vertical portions was you can't go backward, and if you fall into, like, a previous area, you die. It doesn't matter if there was a platform below you at some point. Like, the screen kills you. And I thought we got past this.
I see what you mean by, like, the logic of it bothering you, but the actual gameplay of it didn't bother me because it felt like that
was
the challenge.
It was very frustrating.
I'm not going to give this a pass either, and here's why, because of what Sean just said. I thought we got past this, you know? Like, from a programming standpoint, we've seen, like, Castlevania, you can go back to, you know, obviously you can't reopen the old doors, but anywhere in that level that you're currently on, you can walk back to.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense here that, like, the platform I was just on, because I've jumped to the next one, now there's just, a pit.
Right.
It's not like world is constantly
I completely agree.
Devoured.
It doesn't make sense on like a story or like a story standpoint. But I didn't mind it in the gameplay.
The only
reason I didn't mind in the gameplay is I feel like at least in the first world where it wasn't too difficult yet, I didn't really get to the third world where it's another vertical. It wasn't too difficult yet in the first world. At least that presented more of a challenge. Like that's how I died the most.
This game is not lacking in challenge. That's
this
true.
Game
that's
is certainly not lacking in challenge. And I do think this is one of the more difficult mechanics early on because you're not really dealing with tough enemies yet.
No.
They're mostly just like these little snake guys. And those one-eyed, like, flying monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the Reapers.
Yeah, and they call in
they
their little
suck.
Reapers.
Yes.
What'd you call them?
They do suck.
I thought you were making, like, a Medusa.
No.
They're called Reapets.
Yeah, Reapets?
Yeah.
Okay. Which makes sense because, I mean, we can't have the Grim Reaper from Castlevania in this game as well. And not so many of them. So, yeah, those Reapets going around. They're a really cool mechanic, though, of playing, like, hide-and-seek in a vertical level.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a stealth portion, I guess.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, in this vertical level, thankfully, you can wrap around
Which is another strange thing, yeah.
Well, the game even designs itself a little bit around that in certain portions, which I thought was a nice touch in terms of design. Mm-hmm. Here's something I'll say about the design of just all the levels is that, you know, there's a lot of thought put into, like, where enemies should be. Not as perfect, again, as Super Mario Brothers, but in the sense that, like, you're not overwhelmed at any particular point, and when you are overwhelmed, you're supposed to be. You know, like, you've been spotted by a Reaper, now those flying snake guys come around, and you've got to deal with the flying eye guys, and there's not much space, and you've got a black hole below you. So it's like, you've put yourself in that situation.
I wouldn't, you know what? No, that's victim blaming, I think. Like, no, this game, you're not putting yourself, the game is doing this to you. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that the game is hard, and I think that might be something that's holding it back, but Legend of Zelda and Metroid are both very hard games, too, so I can't imagine that being a reason for this game falling.
Yeah, trust me, I think this game is very hard, and I didn't beat it, and I do want to at some point try and beat it, because I had that much fun, but it got to the point where I was like, wow, I'm going to need to practice in order to get any further, but I do think, for me, as far as I got, it was easier than Castlevania.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys agree.
And I like this because it's also like they're, you know, because of the password system, you're even able to keep your progress as a character.
Yeah.
Which I like, you know? So it's not like, you know, in Castlevania, if you start over on the same level, it's like, well, now you don't have the whip and you don't have the full powerful whip and you don't have your secondary weapon. Here it's like any strength upgrades you got, any mallets you had, any potions you were holding on to, all that stuff stays. So I think that's a nice touch.
Yeah, you're able to hone your craft over a couple weeks and stay on the same save file instead of like, all right, I guess I'm done trying to beat Castlevania today. I'll try again from the beginning tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I kind of talked about in the beginning. The game's long.
Yeah.
Kid Icarus is a pretty long game. Even if you're just kind of flying by everything, if you're not like tackling every enemy and just trying to get from point A to point B, there's still fairly long stages.
Yeah.
And there's four levels on each of the three worlds,
right?
Which I thought was, you know, like there was enough there that I didn't get like, I don't know, I didn't get tired of the levels, but I do think that, like, by the time I got to the boss dungeon, what do we call that? A fortress, right?
Yeah.
By the time we got to the fortress, I was happy to be done with that section.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I did think that the way the worlds are laid out, at least, like, in the manual, the way that you see them on, like, a map, makes it more so than other games where you can kind of tell where you are in the world based on the game. Like, you start out going vertically to try and get up out of the underworld. Then you're going horizontally to move towards the sky, you know, the sky
elevator
area.
Yeah.
And then you're going vertically again, and then you're going horizontally again.
Oh, like context to your gameplay.
Exactly.
I like that. I think a lot of those more ambiguous things, this game does very well. Me and you aren't in agreement on, like, the more, like, hard, gameplay design decisions, I think. Like, I think they made a lot more mistakes than I think you did.
You mean
than I think you think of?
Right. You mean, oh, I mean, like, referencing the falling in the...
Yeah, like, yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah. I can see your guys' side of that, too. I guess I just... playing devil's advocate. But let me ask you, what would happen in your version if you fell?
And
you just keep scrolling? Like, you're at the top, you fall off, and you don't hit anything. You just keep falling and never...
Well, so I'll give you an example here from a game that we'll be playing shortly that I have played before. Metroid, in that game, you can fall and you won't die. You'll just continue to fall. But more than likely, falling, you'll see a platform that you
right.
can fall
right.
to.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you fall in a hard straight line.
Sure, sure.
You have, like, the will to move to the left and right. But I think, like, even going back to, you know, the difficulty thing, there's not really a lot of ways to recover your health throughout the level. I think early on, they tease this idea because it happened so early in the very first stage.
The spas? That,
not even the spa, but just like those potions, you know, like the... Not the chalice.
The water, yeah.
But before you even get the bottles, just the chalice alone. Mm-hmm. And you drink that and you get most of your health back. It happens so early on in stage one, that's right after the first two Reaper fights, that you think like, oh, I'm going to see these like pretty often.
Yeah.
I rarely went into those things.
You had
to
like buy them most often.
Yeah, most of them you had to buy them. And my strategy was just to buy the bottles instead of the chalices, because I was like, I ain't got time to waste, you know, my hearts.
So what is our current currency, the hearts.
Yeah, let's talk about the currency, because I think that's an interesting scenario here, because I would think that the enemies would be a perfect opportunity to give you a little bit of health, but instead they give you hearts, just like Castlevania gave us hearts. Now we got another game giving us hearts, but they're currency, and small little enemies will give you just one heart. Then there's like big half hearts that from medium enemies that will give you five, and then the big full heart is 10. And somehow you have to collect like enough of these to be able to afford like 500 heart things in the store. The stores have like ridiculous prices, and they don't shy away from that ever. Like the very first stage. Can anyone afford anything by the time they get to that first stage?
I mean, if they have like a hammer for 20 or something like that,
that's
maybe,
true. Yeah, the hammer.
But everything else is outside
and
of
you,
my price
and you
range.
Get so many hammers throughout. That's like the one thing I don't ever feel like I want to buy. Like you get hammers throughout.
I mean, they're cheap enough that it's just like, okay, I can buy a couple.
Yeah, but do you really want to be wasting your hearts when you could get something like a barrel?
True, true. Can you explain what a barrel does? Because that sounds really stupid.
Pit just picks up the barrel and he throws it at the end. No.
Yeah, it's like a donkey.
We haven't even explained what hearts, what hammers do.
We'll get into all of that. I think this is actually a perfect time to transition over to items, and we can kind of just start right away in the store. So you get to the store, and there's usually three items for sale. I think it's random. I don't think that there's a way to determine beforehand which.
Yeah, I'm not
sure. Which ones you're gonna
get. They have changed from playthrough to playthrough, I think.
But yeah, so you have you have the chalice, which gives you like a little bit of life back, and that's usually pretty cheap. I recommend not buying that. Then you have the bottle, which is great because if you lose all of your health, you won't get a game over screen.
You remember you have the bottle.
Yeah, you'll have the bottle. You'll drink out of it, and you'll get, like, a quarter of your health back. I thought I was going to get my entire health bar. I thought it was, like, a full, like, you know how, like, energy meters in Metroid?
Yeah.
Like, I thought we were going to get one of those where it's like, oh, I got my whole life back. But it was like, I get a quarter of it.
Yeah.
So the barrel's really good because the barrel will give you, so this way you can hold up to 8 bottles. I thought that was pretty cool.
That definitely extends the amount of time you're staying alive, but significantly, because unless you fall into a pit. But
no. The pit has there's a solution to the pit.
There is, yes. That's the feather.
Oh, yeah. But you only get one use of like this, right? Or
you can only hold on to, I think, one, but like you fall and you come right back up off the screen, and that's kind of cool because it's like, Pit is an angel who can't fly, but now this feather gives him the ability to fly only when in perilous danger.
Yeah.
And then on like a weird note, there's a credit card that you can buy.
Which is, it doesn't work for like the aesthetic of this game.
But it, you know what, doesn't it though? This game is already showing off how like it's kind of a little weird and it's kind of funny. And like, think about like some of the enemies in this game, like those guys that look like the Rolling Stone tongues. I think they're in stage 3, world 3. You got guys like that. You got the speck nose guys.
The mustache.
None of that puts it in a time period. Like I've come to conclude that this game is in times of myth, or at the very least, ancient Greece.
The back of the box even tells us so.
And then there's a credit card. Yeah. There's nothing else.
And the sprite is just a credit card.
It's a credit card.
Why do you guys think so poorly of like Greek mythology that they couldn't have conceived the concept
because
of
they
cards?
Didn't, Mike.
Well, it's the magnetic strip that seems like it might be a challenge.
Well, we never see Pitt use the magnetic strip in the game, but guys, what does the credit card do?
It allows you to buy on credit like a credit card does.
But you can buy on credit and then like immediately afterwards, now you just have the total that you owe on the credit card up in the corner. And as you collect hearts in the game, you don't get those hearts. It just goes down on credit.
This is a game about paying off your student loans.
This is the original Animal Crossing.
So I never used the credit card. Is there a credit limit?
There is a credit limit.
Yeah.
Your first purchase.
You buy a hammer, you can't buy anything else. Yeah.
You better buy the best thing because, you only get one use out of the credit card, too. It's not like pay it down and then,
you can't pay in installments.
Again. But, I don't really know. I don't know if there was like interest. I wasn't really checking in on that regard, but that would have been another cool
interest.
Thing.
If there was interest, that would be impressive.
Interest on each world, like so once you get to like 1, 2, it's like, hey, you had all last stage to get me back my money.
Yeah, but I think the actual interest is just like, oh god, I'm in debt. I'm already in a new world. I need items, but I can't buy any. Like you, it's a really
you're in a foreign land.
It's
and
a
you
good
don't have any money.
Debt anxiety simulator.
One thing that I don't think a lot of people know this, but I'll share it with you guys. In the store, when you go in there and you see the prices and you're like, this is outrageous. did you guys know that you can haggle with the store?
Somehow I knew you were
How?
About to say that.
How
but
do
I
you
had
do
no
that?
Idea that that was
There's no way to interact with the guys for shooting arrows.
So, first off, I'm not going to try to give too much backstory right here, but basically, the Famicom version of this game is just a little different, but most notably, the difference on the Famicom controllers is that they had a microphone built into them. So using the microphone on the Famicom, you could shout into it. And by shouting into it when you're in the stores, you will get a reaction out of the store owner, you know, to like basically like you're bartering with him. And he will either lower the prices or get pissed off and raise them even so, further.
But this just picks up that you've shouted
it
and
just
decides
picks up
randomly.
That you've shouted
this is outrageous.
Yeah, it's not even just talking. You have to shout. But you can do it on the NES version as well by exploiting taking the second controller, plugging that into port 2, and then hitting A and B at the same time. And then that will do
Wow.
the same result as the shouting did. And the things will either go down or up in the store. And I found for the most part they go down. But, man, when they go up, he really shoots up the prices.
Really?
Like, I saw something selling for 900, you know,
900.
Like 900 hearts.
You can only
like,
carry
but
like 999.
Yes, exactly.
But does that carry over to, like, the next time you find that item, it'll still be that price?
No. It's just for that specific. Yeah. You know, because you're imagining each one of them being a different dealer.
Right.
It's not like it's a traveling salesman.
I don't know if they talk to each other, you know.
Because if he was traveling around doing all this stuff, it's like he might as well defeat Medusa.
I mean, they might have cell phones to talk to each other. They have credit cards.
No,
they
he's
might
be... part of, like... He's part of the Medusa regime.
Yeah, I was going to say, who are these scummy guys that have all this equipment and the world is in peril and they're like, well, this is a chance for me to make a quick buck off the kid.
No, that's great. It's just, profit off of profit out of crisis.
Yeah, nice. So that's the store. I can't believe it. We talked about the store for that long. Do you guys want to talk about the treasure chamber? That's the one with the pots?
Yeah, it's basically you're gambling every time you walk in there.
So there's gambling in the game now, too. There's credit cards, there's gambling, there's haggling.
So basically you got, was it like 9 platforms in there?
Yeah, I think it's 9. There's 4 on each side and then 1 in the middle.
Yeah, so you can go and break all those treasure chests, and usually they have full heart or a hammer or, you know, something
never
basic
anything
like
that good.
Nothing
it's always like stuff you want to collect.
And then if you're unlucky or just you have average luck, you'll probably come across the God of Poverty. The God of Poverty.
Literally what
that's what it's called.
The God of Poverty lives in treasure chests, and like if you get really greedy and try to open too many, or if you're unlucky, your first one may be the God of Poverty. He just takes everything away from you. But
only everything that you opened in that
everything
room.
That you opened, yes.
Because when I read the manual, I thought he was going to take all my items.
Yeah.
I was terrified of that God of Poverty.
Yeah,
it was a. Yeah, it was a little anxiety-inducing. But if you get to the last one and you open it, it's usually something a little bit more valuable, like a feather.
Yeah, it's funny. I never was risky enough to try to do them all anyway. Like, I usually would just, like, open up one, see a heart, and be like,
that's good enough.
Yeah, I'll try one more. And then, like, it'd be the God of Poverty. And I'd be like, wow, I'm really bad at this. Because as often as it seems like you might get the God of Poverty, it's you only have a 1 in 9 chance of summoning him. Like, you should play the game a little bit.
But then it's like, isn't it then you get like 1 in 8 and then 1 in 7?
Yeah. Sure. Look, I'm not saying take it all the way. Okay, that's like, it's like deal or no deal mentality.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Where it's not good to open up all the briefcases, but it's certainly good to open up at least half of them so that you can get a better deal with the dealer.
Or no deal.
That's, yeah, I mean, that's some, yeah, that's some late game deal or no deal strategies right there.
That was free.
Deal or no deal. That's, is that even a thing anymore?
I don't think it's a thing anymore, but there was
definitely an arcade machine now.
One time in college, I was very sick for like a week, and I just stayed in my bed and watched Deal or No Deal for a week, and I honestly feel like there was a point where I lost control of my body and just knew I couldn't change the channel.
You were that big a fan of Howie, huh?
It's just like, well, I grew up on Howie, actually, but we're not going to get to that story. That was back when Howie had hair and he played a cartoon bear on PC games.
Wow, here we go.
We'll never get to PC nostalgia, though, because there's way too many games to cover. So
right.
That's the treasure chamber in a nutshell. We don't really need to talk
anymore
about that.
Yeah, a lot of Holly Mandel going on in there. And a lot of...
So then let's talk about the hot spring chamber. This is the best room in the whole game.
This is a nice, relaxing spa. You go into the gold water.
Yeah, it's weird that it's gold. It could be piss.
Honestly, the first time I went in there, I didn't even go in the water because I thought it was going to hurt me.
Right.
And then the next time I went in there, I was kicking myself, like, the next one I found, which is, like, 2 hours later because they're so infrequent. But...
And it's an interesting mechanic that I don't know why they did it like this, but it's, like, time-based. You go in there and you slowly recover your health. Instead of it just going all the way up to full.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not patient, so I've had enough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want the whole health.
I feel like it was more of, like, the effect.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can feel it rejuvenating you.
Yeah. You're probably right, because they made a lot of, like, decisions like that in this game.
Kid Icarus is not a game you can rush through. I want to stress that, like, yeah, you can try and dodge stuff for a long time, but then you're going to be without items, and you're just going to be a really weak pit in the later stages, which isn't going to help you. So I think, like, you know, similar to how we were talking about, like, Castlevania being a game that requires patience, you know? Mm-hmm. And even, like, to an extent, Super Mario Brothers. Like, unless you know those levels, like, back and forth through your head, like, if you're just running through those stages, you're bound to, like, accidentally hit into a Goomba or a Koopa. You know? That's kind of, like, what this is like, you've rushed through this thing too much, you might just bump into bump into enemies, like, too frequently, and then you all of a sudden only have, like, one hit left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, I think that... With Castlevania, though, you could just rush through it, and you would more or less be the same strength as you were if you took your time.
Mm-hmm.
This one, like you said, like, will actually punish you in the long term, which is interesting.
Yeah. And I think that, that's interesting because they both had health meters. They just worked kind of differently.
Yeah. Like, this one grows.
Yeah.
It's different.
All right. So that's the hot spring chamber. Just a nice reminder to, like, slow down. You don't have to rush through the game.
Yeah.
We got plenty of games.
It's a resting station. You rest while Pit rests.
Yes, I like that. And then the last one, the training chamber.
So the training chamber.
Yes.
The training chamber is a place where I guess there's a rogue Skyworld
officer. For some reason, I don't know if I read this in the manual or on Game Facts, but I'm inclined to believe that that's Zeus.
That's just Zeus.
Does he doesn't like, feel like he needs to do anything.
Maybe
give me a hand
this?
Here. Like, maybe instead of throwing doors at me or whatever those are.
Okay, they're not doors.
What are they?
I think they
like
definitely
some Doctor Strange level shit.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a name, and there is a real description of what they are, but I thought they were just mirrors.
Yeah, mirrors make sense, but I really just thought it was like, you know, abstract projectiles that he's just like summoning into existence. That's why I thought he was Zeus.
It's just like the platonic ideal of a rectangle.
Yeah.
Like,
and just to back up, so he says, Zeus apparently says, like, are you ready for some intense training or something like that? And then all of a sudden, these rectangles start falling down at you, or some of them start to fall, but then they swoop to the side and try and clip you from the side. And it's kind of a mess.
They spawn up at the top, and some will, like, you know, hook left, hook right. And there's, like, no telling, and there's got to be at least 5 or 6 on the stage at a time.
I think there's more than 6. I think
it's like the whole screen.
Yeah, maybe I just got overwhelmed and I'm overestimating, but it felt like there was a lot. Like, too much.
Yeah. And then I didn't even realize at first that you can shoot them. So I was, like, dead every time.
You were just waiting it out?
You were just trying to dodge them?
I was just leaving. I wasn't even trying to beat it.
Okay.
I was like, this is, it kills me every time. And when you leave, Zeus says, He doesn't call you a coward. He says you weakling.
Oh, wow.
Point. But then I realized you could shoot them, and it was still really, really hard.
Yeah. So that's how you get he will give you a choice of power up.
And the power ups are great.
Yeah.
Okay? So this is the thing. Okay. If you can endure these levels, which I will say it takes a lot, and you'll probably be worse off leaving this room because you have really low health, but if you can then survive it, the rewards are great because basically you have a choice between two bubbles like floating around you, similar to like Gradius style,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's like you have like this protection at all times.
That's the wand, much. Right? Or the
No, that's not the wand. That is the wand. Sorry. That's the wand. Then you can have the bow, which will upgrade your bows this way you shoot further and faster. And I think it's on the third upgrade of the bow that you can actually shoot across the screen every time without fail. So that's great. And then the last option, which I also think is pretty cool, but usually is the one I default to last, like, you know, out of all of the strength
you
and endurance,
fire.
This one last, is the fire. Because all it does is, like, when you shoot an enemy, it just keeps them on fire so they keep doing more damage to them. But I found that as I continued to, like, upgrade my strength, most things were getting killed in one or two hits anyway.
But
so
doesn't it also sort of extend the amount of, like, it makes it a wider hit spread?
Is that what it does?
I think it does, because every time you shoot a fire arrow, there's a flame that sort of spirals around it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry. I thought you meant, like, it was shooting in, like, different angles.
No,
that is true. Yeah. So it does do that, which is nice, because sometimes you think you're lined up with an enemy, but you're, like, slightly off. I experience this a lot in the overworld section, what Joe would call the mainland.
The main world.
The main world. In the overworld section, those, like, rocks, those rock characters that kept falling from the sky, I would be like, oh, gotcha, and point upwards and shoot them, and it would just go just right past them, just a little bit.
And
so it would
be
nice to have the fire in that situation.
That is another thing that it took me a while to, like, just dawn on me. Like, wait, I can shoot those things instead of trying to, like, get out of the way of them all the time.
Yeah,
they
shooting
were
up
me a
was
lot.
So frustrating for me that I rarely even used it, and then I forgot about it, and then I'd remember and be like, oh, I'm a badass. I can shoot whatever I want.
Except at an angle.
I just want to clear something up. So looking into the manual, they never specifically call this guy Zeus, but they do call him a friendly god.
Oh,
so
okay.
He should be helping. He should not make you endure, like, strength tests if he wants to, like, save Palutena, but maybe he doesn't give a, you know, crap about her.
Yeah, he's old and washed up. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think we are good to move on to fortresses.
So fortresses are sort of the Bowser's castle of this game.
I would say they're more like Zelda dungeons.
I would say that too. Yeah.
I meant more in like the grand structure
of the
game design like level to level.
Yes.
But yes, they are structured in such a way that you're actually navigating a labyrinth with which are different rooms. Where there can be three exits or two exits or one.
Yeah, and you actually exit, whether it's stage right, stage left, or down, you know, down or up. It's like you're actually on a new part of the map, and if you go back through those doors, you'll go back to those other rooms. And so, you know, playing this game on the NES first, it's like, wow, this is like Legend of Zelda before Legend of Zelda even happened.
There were a lot of things in this game where I thought, I didn't think we would get this until Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, it's the first time that we've seen really like a non-linear level design.
I mean, just even talking about the map the pencil, and the torch.
Yes.
Like, those three things are crazy items that you can only find in the fortress level, but the map will then, like, when you go to the start screen, it will have a map in the top right that just shows the labyrinth.
Completely useless without the torch and the pencil.
Yeah, completely useless, but you can't use the other two things if you haven't found the map. The pencil will mark where you've been as you go through, so it'll kind of, like, outline them in green, but you won't know where you are. And then the torch will tell you where you are in the current, like, space. So it's a good way of getting around, but unfortunately none of those three things help you get any closer to figuring out where the boss is.
Yeah, I did think that they were necessary, at least for me, because after a while I was retracing my steps so much accidentally. I just needed to know at least the pencil. I needed to know where I've already been so I can know what other room to check.
Well, it's a lot of hoops to jump through just to get like that basic functionality out of it, though.
I went old school on it, guys, and I broke out the spreadsheets, you know, and started
you made your own.
You know, mapping it out myself. No,
that's
serious.
Old school?
Like,
is that the old way of playing this game?
Not specifically Kid Icarus, but just like, yeah, those old games, you would draw the map yourself. You know, like you would just feel like, okay, I'm in this box now, and if I go right, I'm in this box, and I would just mark off like what was in that room. So this way I would know if I wanted to go through it again, because there are certain rooms that have eggplant wizards.
Those are the worst.
Okay. This is one of the weirdest features of this game.
Sean, I can't believe that earlier in this podcast you tried to convince people this wasn't a weird game.
No,
and
but
that the credit card was the strangest thing.
I never said that was the strangest thing. Maybe I did. But I mean,
no, I know, I'm only teasing you here.
But why eggplant? Like, I mean, I get the whole it's going to transform you into something like useless. But why eggplant?
So the manual has this to offer in terms of advice. Use the hospital in all exclamation marks. And then watch out for the eggplant wizard spells. They'll turn you into an eggplant. In parentheses, a fate worse than death. Go to a hospital to find a cure. And I just love that, like, the hospital room is completely useless to you if you have low health. You know, like, that doesn't matter. Yeah. They won't see
There's
you.
There's nobody at the hospital.
Kid, you're just bruised.
They specialize in one thing, and that's people who have been turned into eggplants.
I do need to do some I need to look back at myself in the mirror real quick, and you're right. I don't know why I found this that strange. Like, everything about early Nintendo, or just Nintendo in general, is strange. I've been conditioned to understand that mushrooms make me big because it's been so big. But this kind of like, Kid Icarus, the whole franchise, is so foreign to me that I should just take that for granted.
Right. Allegedly, Toru Osawa, who was the guy who originally started the development and idea of Kid Icarus, allegedly he, like, came up with the idea of putting the eggplants in the game, you know? And when Sakamoto and team, like, saw it, like, apparently nobody questioned it. They're like, yep.
Yeah, of course.
Like, we should have these eggplants. We should turn Pit into an eggplant. there's no verification on that, but that is the story Osawa tells, and I think that's funny. So, thankfully, like, you avoid those eggplant guys at all costs, because it is a pain in the neck if you get turned into an eggplant.
Especially if you don't have the map-making tools yet.
Yeah, because you have to try and find that hospital on your own, and you don't know if you're reverse tracking or something, so... basically, getting the eggplant is a fate worse than death, because you basically have to kill yourself if you don't want to try and find the hospital.
Wait, would it? I never actually did this, but if you die as the eggplant, do you respawn as the eggplant?
I honestly don't know.
Oh, with the code? Yeah, I don't know either.
I doubt it.
I don't think you respawn, but I wonder if you were to put the code in.
If you put the code in. Yeah.
I feel like if you put the code in, no, I feel like it would just start you back at the beginning of the fortress.
I gotcha. Okay. Because that would be... Yeah, that would be even outside the context of the game.
Yeah,
fate
like
worse
that's
than
a
death.
Soft lock.
Yeah,
that's like for the unwilling to go to the hospital. That's a soft lock.
Can we talk about one of my favorite features of the fortresses?
Yes, please.
Which is, so throughout your journey to get to the fortress, you've collected all these hammers, but you've not been able to use them. Now, in the fortress, you can find all these centurion statues that are apparently your friends that have been turned to stone by Medusa. And if you use the hammers on them, you just release them and they fly off. And the first time I went through a fortress, I was like, I didn't even pay any attention to those statues. The second
time,
even
though there's an icon for the centurion.
Yeah, there is an icon at the bottom, but I didn't connect them to the statues. There's like a different color, and I don't know, I just didn't pick up on it. Second time I noticed them and I was like, oh, start smashing these I guess I'm releasing them. I've got five.
I didn't know what they were about to do yet either.
They were just gone, and I was like, oh, okay. I released them. I thought it was just points or something.
Yeah.
Then when you get to the boss at the end of the stage, which we haven't talked about yet, you suddenly have the amount of centurions you released fighting by your side. Every time you shoot an arrow, they shoot an arrow. They fly around and...
And it's fun, but is it? Are they really useful?
I think they're useful on certain enemies. I think they were useful on. Well, I don't want to get into the
later
stages.
That's fine. But I guess what I mean is like, you know, they weren't the smartest AI in the batch, and they take one hit and they're dead.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, what else am I going to use my mallets for? So I get it. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a neat concept, but the damage they're dealing. And the length that they stay on the battle for, it's like, this is just more of like a neat concept, like another nice little cool touch.
It rewards exploration. Yeah. I mean, it's better to have
but
them.
But it's not like game
not.
Changing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they definitely could have had something more to them that made them more essential. But I still thought they helped a little bit. Maybe I was like really wanting them to have been helped.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, it's cool. But yeah, I just think it's cool that you have, you know, like mallets at your ability to, you know, release people and have them fight for you. But I don't know, it just didn't do it for me. One thing that I want to talk about in the fortresses, but also just happens in later stages, is that those little harmless snake guys have now become the most annoying thing in the world, because apparently there are these pots that suspend themselves from the ceiling that just spawn an unlimited amount of the snakes when you get close to them. And at first I thought, like, oh, it'll just drop, like, four or five and we'll be done with it, right? But it's like, no, they just keep dropping them. And it's like, Pitt, why not just shoot the freaking pot?
Okay, the pots are indestructible.
Clearly.
They're actually from Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah, those pots. Wait, there are pots in that game that shatter open and reveal snakes?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
but they shatter open.
Well, I mean, in the olden days...
They used to not break.
They were perfect.
After Pitt defeats Medusa, now all pots are vulnerable.
Medusa, the god of pots.
That's really what she was. I don't know, that just annoyed me that, like, you know, this mechanic of just, like, this enemy that's just going to continuously drop because, you know, any little thing that does damage to you does damage to you. And you will have to, like, pay that price. Like, you're not just going to find another chalice anytime soon. It's all stuff that's just weakening you for the boss fight. It's like, I got enough to deal with my own gods throwing mirrors at my face to test my endurance.
You're arguing for, like, a finite amount of snakes
out of the pots,
which is a very, you know, it's a controversial opinion. Finite amount of snakes.
Like, you could run a campaign on that. I am arguing for a finite amount of snakes.
I think, like, five snakes out of a pot makes sense. An unlimited amount. Well, that sounds like some use of witchcraft.
They will stop throwing snakes out if you haven't killed any. So luckily, they can't just be like 30 snakes on a screen.
Yeah, that's true.
Once you kill them, they'll just replace them.
And there
with
are
more.
Some stages where it's like, you know, you're kind of going up like a Donkey Kong looking level where it's like zigzagging and the snakes will fall from the top and kind of like swarm their way down toward you.
It works.
It's like a swarm.
We all knew what you meant.
Yeah.
Like, it's a word.
Okay. So that's that. That's the fortress. Find the boss, and then, you know, we can talk about the bosses if you guys want. Anybody interested?
I don't want to be the one to go through the bosses.
No, that's fine.
I'll
give you the names, okay? So up first in World 1, World 1's underworld boss is Twin Bellows, and that is the two-headed dog.
Yes.
And he's red. And he shoots
very fast projectiles for.
Is there
for
a reason
the
though why
game.
They went with two instead of three? Like, isn't Cerberus like part of Greek mythology?
Yeah, but like I actually think maybe it just would look like a mess of pixels if they tried to make him three-headed.
Yeah,
and as far as I know, there could be some other. There's so many monsters in Greek mythology. Maybe there is some other.
Yeah, maybe there is a twin
thing.
Bellows.
Yeah.
anyway, I think what's cool about these boss battles, though, is the sentries show up to fight, but you also like have a boss health meter in the corner that says like 150, and you have to try and get that down. So you have like an idea of what you have to do. But the bosses do take a ton of shots to get rid of. But they also have a pattern that, you know, is fairly readable. Like, I didn't find Twin Bellows to be like you know, oh, there's a really tough boss. Like, what am I going to do? It was just like, oh, he jumps. I go the other way. I shoot him a couple
times.
Now,
would you say that they telegraph anything, or you just have to learn the...
No, I think you have to learn the pattern. Yeah. We're still not at that stage yet where things are being telegraphed.
Yeah.
In any of these boss fights, by the way, for kidding.
That's what I'm looking for.
The second one, I guess it's not really... There's not, like, specific attacks, but the second one is a very distinct pattern.
You're talking about Hugh Draw?
Yes.
Yeah. Hugh Draw, yes. The blue snake...
Yes.
Yeah, there is like a a zigzag, like
sort of like a
endless
pattern.
W's. Yeah. He's making like endless W's.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know,
or M's.
I found this one to be the toughest of the three because I'm pretty sure only the head can take damage, and you don't really want to get in the way of something that's constantly making diagonals across the stage. So you really have to just wait for that opportune time to do damage to it.
It takes forever.
And it takes forever. Yeah. It's a forever fight.
My strategy was, just I know exactly where to jump and where to jump, when to jump away. I can hit him maybe once or twice, jump away, hit him once or twice. Unfortunately, he takes like 4 damage every hit, and he has like 200
HP. Yeah, he has
HP.
The most health, I think, actually.
I never got to another boss after this. So.
I don't know if he has exactly the most health, but he has a ton of health given what he does.
What's 50 hits?
And then, seriously, what's 50
but
hits
when you're
in a game
jumping
like
around
this?
And you gotta hide for a while,
you
know,
gotta
come
when you're
back.
When you're used to 4 hits at max killing any enemy, what's 50 for a boss? so you have those. And then the last guy, Pandora, which the manual says is the source of all evil. Okay?
Maybe that should be the
thing. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we're opening Pandora's box here with this villain. But Pandora is this bubble character that also switches between being tangible and then going to be invisible. But you can still, like, I don't know if it was meant to be on purpose, but you can see the outline of him if you, like, look hard enough at your screen. So this way you know where he'll, like, pop back in.
Oh, okay. That might have been on purpose.
Yeah, like, it was nice, and I don't know, I just felt like he was really easy, and I'm not even so sure that his bubble himself can attack you.
I think it's
just the balls that fly around the screen that can hurt you.
So I think Pandora, while she may be the source of all evil, doesn't mean that she's particularly, like, powerful.
It's much like, you know, in SpongeBob, the dirty bubble. Like, that's what this is. Like, where you're fighting the dirty bubble. Like, this...
At least it wasn't a Jimmy Neutron reference.
To tie it to Nickelodeon, though, I thought of the dirty bubble, but when you said that you can sort of see the outline, I thought of Dotted Line Girl, if that's not too deep of a cut.
That's a pretty deep cut.
You Rugrats fans out
there. There we go. And Chucky, he drives the car.
there you go. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep. So those are the bosses of the fortress, and each one of them is kind of guarding a treasure that is... Is that Paul Lieutenant's treasure?
We haven't even touched on the three treasures.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you don't get to use them until later.
Yeah,
anyway.
But
you collect
that is
them.
The driving force of the story.
Yeah, the whole idea is that you have to collect these... The mirror shield, the light arrows, and the wings of Pegasus.
I think it's the arrows of light.
Okay. The arrows of light.
Nobody knew what you meant.
Yeah, when I said light arrows, people were like, who's this guy?
Shut the podcast
I'm
off.
Turning off this podcast. Yeah, like, he has no credibility. But interestingly enough, okay, so you've collected the mirror shield, you've collected the arrows of light and the wings of Pegasus, and then all of a sudden in stage 4, you get like this nice little cutscene where you transform using that equipment. Like, you weren't able to use it at any other point in the game, but now that you have all three, you have the mirror shield to repel enemy bullets, you have the arrows of light to shoot lasers, and then you have the wings of Pegasus to finally be able to fly. And that's right, in stage 4, you're flying.
A total game changer.
I think so.
I agree, and I do plan on beating this game, but I didn't get to it, so I watched some footage of it just to see what it was all about, and it looks like it is a total game changer.
All of a sudden, it's a shmup.
Yeah,
so I used a lot of the passwords because I couldn't beat any of these things, really.
There, Sean.
I was able to get into the first fortress, but not beat it. But anyway, I used the password to get to the shmup levels, and...
There's only one.
Level with, you know, sub-levels.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's serviceable. It's passable.
I think it's just a fun change.
Yeah.
I think it's very flawed.
Oh, right? Yeah.
We're not playing, like, Gradius level gameplay here. We're playing a game that was supposed to be an action platformer and is now a shmup, you know? It's like, now all of a sudden you have to, like, learn how to, like, play that kind of style of a game, and it's slow.
And it's this is a thing that Nintendo seems to do a lot. It's just like, all right, we got a perfectly good system right now of like an action platformer, and now here's a water level, or
right.
now here's the flying level, and it's telling. Like, they're gonna keep doing this,
but only Nintendo would do this. You don't see in like Castlevania all of a sudden Simon gets on a motorcycle
exactly.
and drives through the courtyard. You know, it's like you don't have to do any of like that kind of on rails thing in those other platforms. And just for Nintendo, but maybe that's just because they like to spice it up. I will say that. Another thing that was, like, something Sakamoto wanted to do with this game was, like, Stage 4 was just added at the very end of development. Mm. Like, it was just, like, a cool way to surprise players and do, like, something different with it.
Did they just want to end the game at...
I think it was just going to end with a Medusa fight, but they didn't plan on it being, like, on rails and have it, you know...
So this is on rails. Like, the screen, it's a automatic scrolling.
Screen, yep. Okay. Automatic scrolling.
I didn't realize
screen,
that from watching.
Yeah, and that's a bit of a bummer because, you know, your lasers, as awesome as they are, they're not perfect, and a lot of times you'll aim to shoot an enemy and you won't be able to actually land a hit on them, and then they'll come charging at you,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason your mirror shield isn't good at blocking like physical charges.
Yeah, it breaks the mirror.
Yeah. So you take damage for that. But Stage 4 also doesn't have like a finite end to it. You have to collect a certain amount of hearts to get to the Medusa fight. Then and only then can you get to the Medusa fight.
I guess I just assumed that when I played that level, I just...
You didn't notice you were looping?
End. No, I thought it was just that... Like, that was just the pattern.
Yeah, no, you keep looping, and I think you have to collect a certain amount of hearts. I'm pretty sure that's the case. I'll double-check myself, of course. But then you get to the Medusa fight, and it's kind of lackluster.
Yeah, I found it easier.
Easy,
yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but does Medusa not have HP displayed?
Medusa does not have HP displayed, as far as I remember.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of actually, even though I didn't play it, so maybe I would have a different idea if I was going through that, but... I thought that was kind of cool.
It is cool. She has less health than some of the bosses in the fortress, which is weird. But I think it's like kind of like
Final
ominous.
Fantasy.
Like, yeah, you don't
almost.
Know. Yeah, you don't know like how long you're gonna have to fight this, this villain.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some interesting things going on. Like she's summoning the snakes out of her hair, but like also she's like attached to a wall.
Yeah, it's like she's really big. Like,
yeah,
she doesn't have a body.
Isn't she like inside of that thing too? After you beat her, doesn't like something open up and you see like the
Medusa
figure standing there?
Yeah, it was like she was projecting herself onto the wall.
It was all very strange. It feels like a fever dream. and she's shooting like these projectiles at you, but as long as you just block them with the mirror shield, granted she's always spamming them.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, like, and you know, I understand this game was a little bit rushed to the market. But there's a spot where you can just perfectly stand and hit her in the eye and not have to, like, worry about taking damage. And that's just disappointing because, like, you know, in Gradius, we talked about sweet spots. But there was never, like, a spot where it's like, oh, just stay right here and you'll just be able to defeat it. And it's kind of, like, cheap that's, like, a final boss exploit.
So I know that you mentioned that they just threw the final level in at the end, but this is the first I'm hearing that this was a rushed game. I didn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we can get into that in a second, but yeah, the development for this game is something that Nintendo probably didn't want known. But Osawa, departed with the company and kind of did like a tell-all eventually.
Oh, okay.
And he says some crazy things during that. but that's the game. And after that, you get to the ending screen where you meet Palutena again, and you get one of five endings.
Yeah. And that blew my mind.
What, the idea that there's...
The multiple endings? I used to always think about one of my favorite games, Chrono Trigger. I used to think, like, wow, it's amazing that a late Super Nintendo game had multiple endings. And now I'm seeing that, like, I mean, they're not, obviously, they're, these endings aren't
the complexities are different. Yeah. No, I agree.
But still, just the fact that they have it is pretty amazing to me.
Unfortunately, Joe, you weren't on our Mighty Bomb Jack episode, but Mighty Bomb Jack has alternate endings.
There are alternate endings
as well. There's a best ending where the entire family is saved.
Yeah.
That's the
everything
best
else is suboptimal, where like you have dead brothers and shit.
I've yet to play this game, but I will have to play it.
So that's that. But the interesting thing is how you get the endings, because I was expecting a pretty good ending for myself. I thought like, oh, I played this game pretty well.
So what did you get?
I think I got like the second worst ending. Like,
so
not
you
the,
were like a
so
guard.
You got a helmet and a weapon.
Yeah, exactly. I got the helmet and the thing. And so just so that you guys know, it's determined by how you maxed out your stats. So hearts at 999, strength at 5, endurance at 5, and all three weapons acquired. If you have all of those, you'll get the perfect ending. And then for each one that you don't have, you'll go down a step in the endings.
So the best ending.
Best ending is great.
Yeah, you become a big boy.
Become big boy.
You grow to about the height of Palutena.
And, about. Yeah. She's very tall.
Yeah, and then you get a little peck on the cheek. And
it's a modest game.
Yeah. Right? And then like the background opens up and they're just cherubs everywhere and like it's a celebration.
Yeah, and they're throwing hearts on you and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean that's kind of a slap in the face to anybody who didn't choose to max out the heart. Something that's clearly like the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, if you do something that is like I can't do it, if you just beat the game in any way, You're just a lowly farmer, and that's not a smack against farmers for me.
And also, you have saved the world.
And
the cherubs can't be bothered to come out and throw some flower petals on you. Like
thanks a lot.
You don't have.
But it wasn't that impressive.
You don't have 999 hearts.
Yeah. Do you guys think Chubby Cherub is in that batch of cherubs?
I think he's one of them.
They're like immortal, right? Like he's because Chubby Cherub takes place in like the 1970s. So I was just wondering, do you think he was
around? Because you're in like a city.
You don't
there's
follow
credit
the deep
cards everywhere.
Lore of Chubby Cherub.
Why is it the 70s?
For those of you who are listening to a more important episode like Kid Icarus, Chubby Cherub was a game that came out last year, 1986. And you play as Chubby Cherub who has to save his friends.
He's afraid
from
of dogs.
Dogs.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
It's a whole thing. But those of you who listen to that episode, you guys, the real MVP. anyway, I will humor you with this, though, Sean. So you thought that the farmer was the worst ending.
I thought that was the worst ending.
And it is the worst ending in the polite North American version. However, in the Japanese Famicom Disk System version, there is a worse ending where you will actually just turn into a speck nose. With the giant noses and the mustaches and the eyes.
You save the world and you're punished?
You're punished. You turn into a speck nose. It's like, you suck at this game.
Wait,
like,
so is that an additional? Are there five endings plus that worse one? Or does that replace the worst
ending? I actually think it might replace the farmer because I can't imagine like...
Oh, yeah, what else could you do wrong?
A scenario where you don't have all three weapons acquired. Like, maybe the speck nose is only acquired if you did cheats. Like, to use a password to get there, and you just didn't do any, like, you know, your password didn't include any of the things for power-ups. But, man, what a ride. I know, like, we haven't really talked about the RPG elements of this too much in terms of, like, leveling up strength and leveling up endurance. And it's like, well, because those things don't really, like, happen in the same way like an RPG does.
No.
And the effects are, like, barely noticeable. Yeah. Like, they're needed.
There is progression. But,
but it's like... To the sense where when you start World 2, the enemies that that you were fighting in the previous thing are no longer around. It's these new enemies, and they take more hits. So naturally, you need your strength to grow in order to get them back to that similar level.
It's not like you can sort of customize how you want to play. It's like, no, you need to be like this if you're going to continue.
And now for the cool moment, when the game ends and you've gotten your ending and everything like that, I think it says press start to continue, and you press start, and the game starts right back from the beginning, and you're like, huh, what's going on? It's a new game, plus.
You keep your
progression,
which is the other thing that the other thing that I always am like, wow, I can't believe Chrono Trigger did this, a game that comes out years later.
Yeah,
and I'm amazed that they did this.
Also, I can't wait to see how many more examples there are than just this game when it comes to those things. Like New Game Plus. I mean, like if Kid Icarus was able to think about it, other games.
I mean,
were
I
too.
Don't. I never thought with Chrono Trigger that like it was the first game. I just thought that the other games that did it were around the Super Nintendo time and not on the NES.
But hey, remember in stage 1-1, the very first door you come across and it's empty?
Yeah.
Not in New Game Plus.
Oh. It's a party, right?
No, that'd be so cool. It's actually just a Medusa fight right away. Like, no, it's actually a chance to level up your strength if you haven't already maxed it out. It's a way to get your strength up again.
So you could still become Big Boy Pit.
Well, I think that might be what the whole point of New Game Plus is, though, is that like a lot of people on their first playthrough won't get Big Boy Pit, and which is stupid.
Is that canonically what he's called?
Yeah, I actually don't. Yeah, he's just a grown man, I guess.
Can I also ask too? Did Mike, you beat the game, right?
Yes.
Did you and you said you got the second ending or the second worst ending?
Yeah.
Did you get like a story at the end saying like Medusa has been defeated and yada yada yada, like a whole screen of a paragraph?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was only the video I watched, because then I watched the video of all the endings. The video I watched only showed that in the last one, but probably just because it was going to be the same every time.
I'm pretty sure I remember that. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, it happens
like immediately after the Medusa fight. Yeah.
Well, no, it happens after you meet Palutena and
Right. That's what I mean.
Okay. Also, I just remember noticing that it says, the New Game Plus might explain this, but it says, whatever, you've beaten Medusa, yada, 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 but in order to maintain peace, Pit's struggle continues. And that's it. It doesn't tell you, like, what they mean.
Well, maybe they're teasing the Game Boy game.
Yeah.
You know? There was a Game Boy game, Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters, which was released in 1991, so there's some time for that. But it plays very much the same exact way as this one. And it's just a little like clunkier, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's a pretty impressive game for the Game Boy in the sense that it's doing all the same things that Kid Icarus was doing.
Very cool. And another thing that we didn't really talk about at the top is how great the like movement feels in this game. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but
yeah, this is another game. Very rarely, I mean, you know, I wasn't feeling it in Castlevania, but this game gets the jump right.
Yeah, you know? I think next to Super Mario Brothers, this is the best game. This is the best movement other than Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I think that jump is fantastic. Another thing we didn't talk about though, the music.
Right,
the music in this game. I don't know about you guys, but when I booted up this game, and it, you know, like the title screen comes down. And you hear that, like, whistle. Like, all of a sudden, that just commands my attention. Like, usually I'm, like, press start just to get through the game's opening. But here I'm like, huh, what's going on? And then some, like, little synths come in. Next thing you know, we got, like, a bass drop. And there's, like, you know, like, there's all these things going on. Yeah, and then there's a laser light show.
You hear, like, DJ Khaled in the background. No, I mean, this is the most complex, intro we've seen so far. There's, like, scrolling and stuff.
Right. It commanded my attention, and I had to listen to the whole song. And then you go right into World 1-1, and you have that little like march song, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go up through the underworld, and I'm gonna tackle this business, right.
this business.
Well, the point where the music really grabbed me the most was where the tipping point for me was the first fortress and all the fortresses.
Yeah, the fortresses, the way the music builds on itself there is super cool, and it is like,
Can you play it here?
Well, I probably already played it.
Oh, okay.
When we were talking about the fortresses.
Who
themselves.
Are you, Joe?
Yeah. I only really ever play when Sean asked me.
No, last week you didn't. Everybody go back and listen to the Castlevania episode. Mike refused to play a song Sean asked for.
You'll never hear the game over music in Castlevania.
Thank God. I never want to hear it again.
Do-do-do-do. No, that's not it. That's Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, that sounded to me like when you were about to fight a boss in Super Mario Brothers 3.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
But I think in Kid Icarus, the music is sort of a mixed bag. There are some bangers in here.
But, I actually think some of them are on now. That's what I call NES music.
But I guess this sort of is attributed to the fact that it was a rushed ending. But the music that plays during the last the last episode, like where you've got
the
endless
rails.
Scroll. Yeah, you're on rails. Like, it's pretty basic, and it's just a loop.
Or maybe they just intended it that way. No, I agree with you. I think it has to do with the rush there, because we have some good tracks. I really like even the credit track at the end. It like has like a nice little like movement through everything. You know, so I'm a fan of the game's music, but I do think it's time we get into some development talk since I've been teasing this for so long now. I know some fans of the game like it when I do that right off the bat, because then you can just tune out of the rest of the episode. But I'll put a chapter marker right here, so this way you guys can jump right to it.
Smash that chapter marker.
That is right. We put chapter markers in the episodes, and I think by the time this episode's come out, iOS 12 is now like public, so if you listen on Apple Podcasts, it's now a standard feature. But most apps, most good podcast apps have chapter support already. So
that was a criticism of your podcast app.
Yeah. So development for this game is crazy because we know who directed it, and we know who was like involved in producing it and stuff, but we don't know like who exactly was the programming team on this game and who was directly responsible for the ideas and concepts. So here's like the little rundown for you, okay? Toru Osawa debuted as a video game designer for Nintendo, and like within months they had asked him like, "Hey, make your own game," and it's like that's crazy, but they're following like that whole Miyamoto storyline where it's like, hey, look at this guy, like he used to just design art and then one day he made Donkey Kong, like let's give everyone a shot, like anyone can make it here at this company. So he was the only staff member working on the game at the beginning of the project. Imagine being one guy. So he's programming most of the game, and then he either went on to work with TOS, who we've talked about in the past. They make
games.
They make
yes,
games
secretly.
As a secret organization that makes games.
It's an ancient cable organization. Yeah.
So he either makes it with them or, weirdly enough, Intelligent Systems, which is like a Nintendo second party thing. Like they've had a very long relationship with them. Intelligent Systems, one of Sean's favorite games on the NES, Soccer. Was made.
Not my favorite.
One of your favorites. You put it in your best of 85.
Yeah.
That was so,
like 10 games. Okay. Continue. Yeah.
There were 17 games.
Yeah, whatever, Mike.
Anyway, so it was either one of the two or neither. Who knows? Because the story gets so complex. But he worked with them on development, and it's only after Metroid's completion that the rest of the team joins. And the rest of the team, of course, being like Sakamoto and crew, who, of course, now we know about Sakamoto. We talk about him like on all these different episodes, Wrecking Crew and the like. And soon on our Metroid episode, we're going to be talking a bunch about him. But Sakamoto was very cruel during the direction of this game, because I feel like he had just finished Metroid, which was kind of like his baby. And then he comes over to this, sees where it's at, and says, oh, we're in trouble here. Like this is not... Like, this game needs a lot of work. And it's like, well, yeah, you let one guy try to program. Like, Miyamoto by himself, like, and with some programming guys, worked on Donkey Kong, you know? You asking one guy to make a game like Kid Icarus, that's a different story in 1986.
But isn't this sort of Osawa's own fault because it has told him to make a game?
Yeah, yeah. And he designed
bit off this more than he can chew.
He designed this incredibly elaborate game that was supposed to be incredibly serious at the start, but then eventually became a funny game. But Sakamoto went as far as, like, you know, everybody was they were, like, tearing up cardboard boxes and using them to make beds to sleep in the office.
Oh,
like, these are, like, confirmed stories, apparently. And then Osawa, he couldn't get away from the office, but he eventually got married during the development of this game. Instead of taking a honeymoon, he just takes off two or three days. And this is all from Osawa's point of view, I have to mention, by the way. Sakamoto has never, like, said whether this is true or not. But he's at home with his wife, and Sakamoto calls on the second day and says, yeah, this isn't working, you have to come back. And he drags him out of his own, like, short honeymoon to bring him back into the office and work on Kid Icarus. Just to show you how, you know, tough Nintendo is over there. And there's, you know, there's Japanese work pride there, at play. But, of course, Osawa did go back and help finish the game. So then the game comes out for the Famicom Disk System in Japan, which has the ability to save. That's really cool. No passwords. You just save your file. And there's no staff role. No credits at the end of the game. They couldn't be added in time. They were really rushing the development of the game. And in the North American version, it was added. There was a staff role added, but without Osawa's name.
That okay, I guess I just didn't notice because this Osawa is a new name to me because when I did watch the credits and I did not notice that name.
Well, here's why, Sean. They misspelled his name and wrote it as Inusawa.
Inusawa.
I-N-U-S-A-W-A, which
so just
is
adding
crazy.
Like a different sound even. Not even just adding a letter that could be in his name. No, his name like, can't be pronounced the way it's pronounced.
Right, we don't know if like, you know, it's like a translation error. Who like we don't know that the that Sakamoto and crew were like actively sabotaging this. Like I don't think that way of Sakamoto for the record, but even Sakamoto himself recalls, you know, that the way that they rushed out the game was just customers were perfectly willing to play it, and we were perfectly willing to make it that way. That's
wow.
A direct quote from Sakamoto on this game that he probably feels wasn't finished. So I don't think he looked at this game very fondly, and maybe that's why Nintendo really like never continued with it because there isn't like a, you know, a great feel about
yeah.
about the
it
game in
brings
general.
Brings back bad memories, I guess.
Yeah. We already talked about the Game Boy release of Myths and Monsters and the 3DS Kid Icarus Uprising, which I would actually highly recommend everybody at least try because it's a incredibly hard-to-play game. Like, it's not fun controls at all, and you either love it or you hate it. But
oh, okay.
It's really hard to do because it's all on rails, the entire game. The game actually starts with Pit, you know, essentially, like, it picks up right where the NES game left off and even, like, makes a nod that he just defeated Medusa and now he has his wings. And Politena's like, yes, this is my gift to you, Pit. Like, but the game is so, like, so meta and so, like, funny and weird and quirky. And if it's Sakurai style,
so
especially,
like
but, like, yeah, but I think it's just, like, it's just so weird where they went with it. But also, like, you know, if you look at the original game was weird, you know? So it makes sense to take it in that route. It's honestly, it's just fun to watch that game on, like, YouTube, like, watch a long play of it. Because the entire game, since it's on rails, is basically like you just watching, like an hour-long, like a nine-hour-long movie, you know? Like, you're just watching this constant conversations between people.
Interesting.
And, you know, of course, that's how we get Dark Pit and stuff like that. And, you know, there's just a lot of funny commentary going on in that game. So I highly recommend it. That game came out in 2012. And, of course, now Pit and Politena both are in Smash Ultimate. So there's plenty of Kid Icarus to go around. But I'd like to see another more traditional Kid Icarus game. I don't think the Rails thing was a bad idea. But I'd like to see something maybe more in line with the exploration RPG elements.
So was it in any way, like, was the Rails portion just, like, 9 hours of the final level?
Yes, in a sense, but think more like Star Fox 64.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
Or Star Fox in general. I just like to call out Star Fox 64 whenever I can. But enough about other video games and enough about Kid Icarus. It's time to get right down to the bottom of it. Let's bring it into our essential games list. All right, guys, the essential games list. We've had fun talking about this game, but now we got to get real with it, okay? There's only three of us, so you need two. All right. Unfortunately, people would like to think that you just need one vote to get in. You're going to need at least a majority here, so that's going to be two. Two votes to get in. Sean, start us off.
I'm going to handicap you guys because I'm not going to put it in the essential games list. I think this introduces a lot of cool elements. It shows the complexity of the games are going to grow. They're going to mix a bunch of new ideas as time goes on. This is a very encouraging game, just in general, of console game design. I didn't have too much fun with it, though. I was impressed around a bunch of corners, just looking at those different mechanics and how they sort of squished them together. But I didn't have too much fun playing it. So it's a no for me, dog.
All right, that is one no. Joe, are you going to keep the game alive?
All right. So this has a lot of the elements that I would personally like in a game, especially a retro game. And, I mean, it makes it feel like it's a coherent, like, quest or adventure. It's got maybe the deepest plot we've had so far.
The plot, though, is mostly just...
Yeah, you're right. It is in the manual.
In a manual.
It is in the manual, but it is there for me to, like...
It's there.
Hey, don't forget
it's there for me. When I was reading
Super
the manual,
Mario Brothers had a plot.
Right. But I think this might have been deeper.
Okay.
At the time.
I don't know, man.
I can't remember.
Did anybody
Super
get
Mario
turned
Brothers.
Into blocks?
But, yeah, so when I was reading the manual before I played, I was thinking, this is the kind of manual that, like, I would have loved reading... when I was in the car ride home and couldn't play my game yet, or like,
I know what you mean.
And then I would have all this context to the story. So granted, it's a little bit of cheating because...
Essential manuals list.
Right. It's a little bit cheating because the story's not in the game, but with the context that makes it better for me. But also just the fact that you can sort of save it with the password system. I mean, that makes it more of like a quest to me too, because I would never beat this game in one sitting. And then... beyond that, like, adventure element of it, the fact that the movement is so good, the fact that you have items and, like, RPG elements, I really liked this game, and I think I liked it better than Castlevania, which
Whoa.
I put on the essential games list, so I vote this essential.
All right.
There she blows.
Here I go, dog. It's my turn. For those of you that might be a little confused, let me just say that we look at these games if they're essential today. We don't like look at them in terms of the context of that time, because certainly if we did it that way, games would just progressively become more essential because things would just get better.
Right.
All of 89 is essential.
Right. So here's where I'm at with this game, and this is gonna be controversial, I'm sure, to both the listeners and to the people in the room. But as of right now, this game to me is essential. Okay? And I guess what I mean is that when we do our recaps for the end of years and stuff like that, we have a chance to either like put new things on the essential games list or take them off, but it requires like everyone in the group to either vote it on or vote it off. It can't be like one person still says nay or yay. But right now I'm feeling pretty good about Kid Icarus being an essential game. Don't get me wrong, there are certainly flaws. It's a very difficult game. But I actually think, like, you know, especially the fact that I was able to beat it, and I couldn't even beat Castlevania, a game that is, like, much shorter and yet, like, you know, probably, in my opinion, like, controls a little bit better other than the jump. I think, like, for me, what's so exciting about Kid Icarus is all these, like, new things that I'm seeing for the first time on an NES game that I'm sure we'll see in certain other NES games, but there's no doubt that I'll probably make those ones essential as well. I think it's just really cool that in 2018 I can be surprised by what an NES game has to offer. And I think, like, that's why this should go on the essential games list. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not even saying it's close to a 10 out of 10. I'm saying this is a really... unique game to me that stood with me as I was playing it and made me like want to go back each day and progress a little further, type in my password, load up my game, give it another go. It did get a 3DS Classics release as well, which had like some fake 3D looks to it, so maybe try that version if you're looking for a way to get a hold of it. But yeah, I'm not like too concerned with my option of like one day maybe I'll remove this if I feel like it. But for right now, I feel pretty good about putting it on the essential games list.
And there it is.
And that is all the time we have for this episode of Nestalgia. If you are happy or angry with Kid Icarus being on the essential games list, write in and let us know. Or write in to us about anything. Seriously, it doesn't have to be NES related. But
just ask us about our day.
Yeah, yeah. Just please, no one looks at me anymore. they only listen. And you can listen on any podcast app and hit that subscribe button. Because every Friday we're bringing you new episodes, and you know, there's just no telling where I'll stop with nostalgia because there's 700 games, and I'd like to do 700 weeks of this podcast. Speaking of this podcast, it wouldn't be possible without your support, so be sure to go on to nostalgiacast.com, that's nestalgiacast.com, to check out all the articles that we have on there, all the, we have, like, detailed sections for show notes for each episode, as well as, like, cool images and personal thoughts and reviews. You just really never know what you're going to get on that website, so that's why I recommend doing it.
You just listed everything on that website.
Speaking of you never know, you never know what you're going to see on our Twitter feed, which updates daily with some really cool NES stuff. And I'm not talking about, like, some garbage, like, screenshot of a game. Like, does anyone else remember Kid Icarus? Like, nobody remembers Kid Icarus until this episode. But... But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, we're posting, like, really cool stuff, like the NES M8 demo, which is really cool to see, and a lot of AVS stuff that I feel like people haven't seen. So certainly, like, even if you don't want to follow us on Twitter, just check us out there because it's a really cool place for us to kind of, like, make an archive of all Nintendo stuff.
I feel like when you do these really drawn-out, like, closeouts,
yeah.
I feel like I need a hype button.
Hype!
Because, like, you do our best advertisement once most of our listeners have stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to figure something out about that. Maybe we, since we don't have ads,
yeah.
Another great thing about our podcast, since we don't have ads, maybe we should put ads in the middle of the show
for the podcast. That, like, they're listening to.
Yeah, like, hey. Feeling down? We have nostalgiacast.com where you can listen to all your episodes, all your favorite episodes all over again.
You can even listen to the first half of this episode again.
Mm-hmm. And you can download it too because we have high-res episodes, a feature I did not mention. So they didn't know everything before, but now they certainly do. No, because the Essential Games list is also on the website. That's all. I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and I'll talk to you soon. See you next week.